Today we're having a topical discussion on the subject of the qualities of the Vaishnavas, and I was requested in particular to talk about sthira, steadiness. Before going into that subject though, something about the qualities in general. There is a list of 26 qualities of Vaishnavas, and let's see if I can remember them. Kripalula, Kripta Droha, Satya Sarasam, Nido Shavaranyam, Nidu, Suchiya Kincham, Sarvopa Karakashanta Krishna Kasharam, Akama Aniha Stira Vijita Shabuna Mitabuk Apramatta Manana Amani Gambira Karuna Maitra Gavi Daksha Mami. So there are 26 qualities, and these are classified in two categories. One is principal and the other are secondary or marginal. There is one in the first category, and that is Krishna Eka Sharana, taking shelter of the Lord, of Krishna alone. Krishna only, Krishna Eka Sharana. And this principal category, or this principal quality, is considered primary. Why? Because out of this one quality come all the other qualities. Which is to say that all the qualities are already there in the living entity, but they come out, they unfold to the extent that we are surrendered to the Supreme Lord, who is the source of all, of unlimited transcendental qualities. This is expressed in a somewhat polemic way by Prahlad Maharaj in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. You know the word polemic? Polemic means sort of challenging and making an argument, sometimes almost in a threatening sort of tone, sometimes. He says, it's a famous verse, yes, yasti bhaktir bhaktir kinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasate sura harabhavaktasya pito mahanguna Manora Tena Sati Dhavato Bahi. He portrays things in extremes. There are the devotees for whom the good qualities of the suras are present. All of the good qualities, well, actually all of the suras, the demigods reside, samasate, in those who are bhakti bhagavati, akinshan of those who have no material desire. Akinshana literally from the word kim. What does kim mean?
What?
Yeah, it's a question word, kim. And the answer to the word kim? Kinchana, something. And akinchana is not even something. So the akinchana bhakta is one who's making no claims to possess anything. Who is fixed in Bhagavati, in the Lord. That person, it said, the demigods, with all of the demigods' qualities, reside in that person. So That's one side of the picture, and on the other, there are only two options. The other option is hara abhaktasikito mahanguna. What is the question of good qualities being in those who are not devotees of the Lord? Why? Manoratena sati dhavato vahi. They're running after their, or they're running with their mind chariots, literally. So the person who is not sheltered in the source of all good qualities, sooner or later, it has to be expected, they will be dragged away by the mind, the chariot of the mind. Well, and so devotees want to know, how do we manifest all these good qualities which we're supposed to have? They're in me here somewhere, and I don't know where they are. Okay, how do I get them? Manifest? Well, the simple question is by serving the Lord. But of course, one can say more than that. I thought, with regard to steadiness, I'll read a verse and very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada, which describes the opposite of steadiness. One way of getting at an idea is to consider its opposite. So, we have Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 5, Verse 14. This is Narada Muni preaching to the Haryashvas, and as we know, he convinces them to give up what they were sent to do by Yaksha, namely to populate the world, to become progenitors. And this is in a series of verses which has a kind of refrain. The refrain is, Kim asat karma vir babet? What is the use of illusory, of temporary fruitive activities? So the verse, the translation is, first Prabhupada gives in brackets, a contextualization. He says, Narada Muni had described a woman who is a professional prostitute. The Haryashvas understood the identity of this woman. And then the verse is, mixed with the mode of passion, the unsteady intelligence of every living entity is like a prostitute who changes dresses just to attract one's attention. If one fully engages in temporary fruitive activities, not understanding how this is taking place, what does he actually gain? Okay, so it's about unsteady intelligence. This is the steadiness and then unsteadiness. Unsteadiness of what? Unsteadiness of buddhi, of intelligence. Okay, let's see what Srila Prabhupada says. A woman who has no husband declares herself independent, which means that she becomes a prostitute. A prostitute generally dresses herself in various fashions, intended to attract a man's attention to the lower part of her body. Today, it has become a much advertised fashion for a woman to go almost naked, covering the lower part of her body only slightly in order to draw the attention of a man to her private parts for sexual enjoyment. This intelligence engaged to attract a man to the lower part of the body is the intelligence of a professional prostitute. Similarly, the intelligence of a living entity who does not turn his attention toward Krishna or the Krishna consciousness movement simply changes dresses like a prostitute. What is the benefit of such foolish intelligence? One should be intelligently conscious in such a way that he need no longer change from one body to another. Karmis change their professions at any moment, but a Krishna conscious person does not change his profession, for his only profession is to attract the attention of Krishna by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and living a very simple life without following daily changes of fashion. So what is the profession of a devotee?
Chanting or living simple?
Yes, but there's something more here.
He's concerned about attracting the Lord's attention.
Exactly. To attract the attention of Krishna. That's our profession. We are professional attractors of the attention of Krishna. We can have business cards made. I am an attractor of the attention of Krishna. In our Krishna consciousness movement, fashionable persons are taught to adopt one fashion, the dress of a Vaishnava with a shaved head and timak. Prabhupada doesn't say that this is just for the men, so I hope the ladies don't misunderstand. They are taught to be always clean in mind, dressed, and eating in order to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. What is the use of changing one's dress, sometimes wearing long hair and a long beard, and sometimes dressing otherwise? This is not good. One should not waste his time in such frivolous activities. One should always be fixed in Krishna consciousness and take the cure of devotional service with firm determination. Okay, at least twice Srila Prabhupada has used the word fixed, and he uses that word quite a lot in his writing and in his speaking. So what kind of associations do we have with this word fixed? Fixed, fixing. Of course, there's repairing things, but what else in the sense that Srila Prabhupada is using it here? Yes, Tulsi.
It's
unrelated,
it's fixed.
Say again?
It's not deviating, it's fixed. Not shaking.
You're defining the word with the word, okay? Yes, okay. Not moving, perhaps. Anything else? Not attaching, being attached, okay? So being attached to Krishna, being fixed, yes?
Uninterrupted.
Uninterrupted, okay. So steadiness in the sense of continuity. Yes, Purna.
Not deviating.
Not deviating, yes. Srila Prabhupada speaks of this also, that specifically fixity of intelligence means not being disturbed by other philosophies. Hearing something, reading something, and thinking, oh, actually, maybe that's what I should follow. Or surfing the internet and finding, you know, this or that movement, and thinking, oh, maybe I should follow that movement.
Unmotivated,
without motivation.
Without motivation.
Okay, that would be a kind of specification of being attached. Okay. Anything else? Fixity. Being fixed. Yes.
Stability.
Huh? Stability. Stability. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, which is the opposite of what? Instability. And something that's not stable can easily be pushed over, or it can fall off of its track, isn't it? Okay. So I was thinking about this in terms of if we had a what do you call it, whiteboard or something, we could draw a picture here. But I'd like to suggest to sort of broaden this notion for us to reflect on. Imagine a triangle, if you will, with its three points, and at each of these three points we have a sort of steadiness. I would suggest we have at the top internal steadiness, and on the bottom, let's say left, we have steadiness of relationships, and then on the right bottom we would have steadiness of activity. And we might want to put a circle in the middle of this representing devotion to Krishna. So without that circle in the center, of course, we understand we cannot expect to have this kind of, any kind of steadiness. But putting them together, internal steadiness and then steadiness in relationships and steadiness in activity, we can see how they kind of interact and how they are interdependent. And so we get a sense of firmness in steadiness. There's a lot of discussion in Bhagavad Gita about steadiness, and I would say it's mainly in the area of internal steadiness, but not only. If we think about it, what is the whole situation of the Bhagavad Gita? It's Arjuna suddenly becoming very unsteady. He is so much unsteady that his hands are shaking and the Gandiva bow is falling out of his hand and so on. He's collapsing, basically. And so it becomes Krishna's task to restore his sense of steadiness. And he does this in several ways. He kind of urges him that you are a Kshatriya, and as a Kshatriya, if you don't fight, your reputation is going to be lost. And that's going to be worse than death for you. So, if we think about steadiness in terms of dharma, in terms of varna and ashrama specifically, then we can see that dharma, the regulations of dharma, the general principle of dharma, is that it supports determination, it supports resolve, it supports steadiness. It's taking that which we are supposed to do and helping us to remember from one day to the next that that's what we're supposed to do. Imagine every morning you would get up and it's a completely new day. What shall I do today? Let's do something different. Like yesterday I did something different, and the day before that, and every day I do something completely different. And who am I? Who am I, anyway? It would be very difficult to get a life. And so one thing that the principle of dharma does is it supports, it helps. The word dharma comes from dhri, which it means to sustain. So dharma is a principle of supporting our being steady. The word for steadiness, Krishna unsteady. There are two words for steadiness. One is sthira, that's the one I mentioned in the beginning. The other is sthita. Sthita means positioned, standing. So Arjuna in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita asks Krishna, sthita pragyasya kavasa samadhi stasya kejava sthita king pravasita kim asita rajeta king. And then Krishna answers with several verses in which he explains just exactly what it is that makes one sthita pragya or sthita di. Pragya, you know this word? Pragya? Pragya. Nice word. Cool word. Nice word.
Is it about
language? Pragya means wisdom. From ya, knowledge. And pragya is real knowledge, strong knowledge. Pragya. And di? Sthita di. Intelligence. Yes. So, sthita di, fixed intelligence, fixed wisdom. Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the symptoms, what are the qualities, how can I recognize somebody who has this quality? And then, in a sense, the rest of chapter 2 is Krishna's answer to that question. That section is incidentally, or was the favorite part of the Bhagavad Gita for Mahatma Gandhi. Anyway, jatasya hi dhruvam mrityur dhruvam prajahati yada kaman sarvam partamanogatan atman yeva manatushta stita pragya sarochate. Did I get it right? From prajahati yada kaman, someone who has given up, who has rejected all sorts of kama, all kinds of desire, which are manoratam, which are sarva. Prajahati yada kama sarva artha manoratam. Yes, which are a product of the mind chariot. So we have that mind chariot again, and Krishna is saying, one who gives up all of those desires, which are simply products of the mind, that person can is considered sthita pragya or sthita di. Okay? Shishiradha Gopinath ki jaya. And then in sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's more discussion about being fixed. In particular, it has to do with practice of yoga and fixing the intelligence. And so we get, for example, we have the description of, here we are. Prashantatma vigatavir brahmachari rate sthita manasanyamyaya chitto yukta asita matpara. Someone who is prashantatma, who is pacified in the self, whose fear is vigata. Fear is disturbing. And there are all kinds of fear that we have, not just fear of gross things, but fear of things like loss of reputation, fear of what others will think. All kinds of fear can lurk in our minds. So this says, vigatavir, one whose fear is gone, and brahmachari vrate, sthita, who is standing fixed, is steady in the vrata, the vow of brahmacharya. Later, sukham atanti kamyatat buddhi grahyam atindriyam peti yatra na shai mayam sitas chalati tatvatam. This is describing what it's like to be fixed in yoga. And it's quite attractive. Sukham atyantikam yatat buddhi grahyam atindriyam. One experiences sukha, which is ati antikam, which is super, super sukha, super happiness, which is based on fixed intelligence, buddhi grahya. Now the mind, we understand, is that which is characterized by being, in general, very unsteady, isn't it? And that is Arjuna's complaint when he says, you know, come on, you're trying to tell me to control the mind, but it's like trying to control the wind. Forget it. And then Krishna tells him, well, you're right, it is difficult, but it's not impossible. Avyasena tupanteya vairagina cha grihyate. It's possible by two things. One is practice, and the other is detachment. Not one or the other, but both together. The combination of practice and detachment. And all of this is done with the use of intelligence. Because where's the intelligence in relation to the mind?
It's supposed to be subordinate. Should be
Say again?
Is it supposed to be above the mind?
Above, yes. Yes, intelligence is above the mind. It's superior to the mind, which means if we allow ourselves to be governed by the intelligence rather than by the mind, then the intelligence can govern the mind. And one of the main functions of the intelligence is to ask questions. Yes. And one of the questions that we can ask, it's a very simple question that we can ask of the mind. My dear mind, where are you going now? And as soon as we ask the mind this question, the mind kind of stops short and says, I wasn't going anywhere in particular. I'm right here with you. And this way we can gradually bring the mind under control, and that's what Krishna tells Arjuna, shanai shanai ruparamet bhutya dritti grihitayam atmasamsamma pritva na kinchit api chintayet. Shanai, shanai means gradually, gradually. Uparamet, pacifying the mind. Bhutya, with the intelligence, which is dhriti grihita, which has accepted determination, which has been resolved. Then, atma samsam, the mind, mana kritva, having made the mind atma samstam, standing or positioned in the self. Na kinchit api chintaya. What shouldn't be chinta? Chinta means lots of things. It can mean to be worried, for one thing. So don't worry. If one is fixed in the mind, fixed in the self, then there is no need for the mind to worry. Because why? Because it's being directed, it's fixed in the self, it's being fixed, it's being directed by the Supreme Self. Okay, you may say, so then, so we need some determination, isn't it? So Krishna talks about determination in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, different qualities of determination according to the modes of nature. Determination in goodness is described as follows. That determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with steadfastness by yoga practice, and which thus controls the activities of the mind, life, and senses, is determination in the mode of goodness. Interesting, he says, determination which is unbreakable. So let's think for a moment of unbreakable things. What's an example of an unbreakable thing?
Spirit soul.
Spirit soul, okay. Something physical.
Diamonds,
okay. For a moment I thought you said harmonium. Harmoniums are very breakable. Yes.
Water
is unbreakable, okay. And that's interesting because water flows, and that you could say is how it stays unbreakable. Yes.
Mountains,
okay.
They are breakable.
The thunderbolts of Indra try to break mountains but fail. Yes. Yes.
Gold.
Gold is unbreakable. Okay, possibly. Yeah.
Well, I think everything is breakable in about matter because the atoms
can
be broken down.
Oh, okay.
I think, like you want to say, the soul. I think Vanana is the only thing which is unbreakable, and Krishna, of course.
Okay, yes, if we are thinking philosophically, I was you know, thinking more conventionally. We think of certain things as unbreakable. But also, thinking of unbreakable things, conventional unbreakable things, we may notice that certain things are unbreakable, not because they are very hard, but because they are flexible. And in yoga practice, one of the things that one does in Ashtanga Yoga is do asanas, and the idea in asana is to become flexible. And so determination is not the same as stubbornness, or I want to say steadiness is not the same as stubbornness. Sometimes stubbornness can be a virtue, but at other times stubbornness can get in the way of our progress in spiritual life. And this reminds me of a point which Aristotle makes. I may have explained this at some time. When he talks about the virtues, and when we talk about qualities, guna, one of the translations of guna is virtue, he makes an interesting point. If you take any given virtue and take it to an extreme, one way or another, then it's not virtue. So, the example I believe that he gives is courage. Courage is a virtue, everyone agrees, but if you go to one extreme of courage, you get carelessness or foolishness, doing something, taking unnecessary risk. And on the other side of courage is avoiding any kind of risk, and what do we call that?
Cowardice.
So if we think about this point in relation to the modes of nature, and we say that virtue is identified with the mode of goodness, then you take that to one extreme, you get the mode of passion, and you take it to another extreme, and you get the mode of ignorance. But there's another interesting footnote here, if you like. In the Patanjali Yoga Sutra, one of the traditional commentaries, it's explained that when one is fixed in the mode of goodness, then the energy of the mode of passion becomes a support for one's activity in the mode of goodness, and the stability of what we call the mode of ignorance, but which can also simply be translated, well, tamoguna, which can also be translated in a more positive way as having to do with stability, then stability helps one in one's sustenance of the mode of goodness. So in other words, it doesn't always have to be a fight. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there is always a shifting from one mode to the other to the other. And so one can't be complacent and say, now I'm in the mode of goodness and I'll be just fine because the other modes are going to support me. No, watch out. Again, speaking of steadiness, Socrates said that steadiness of soul or endurance is preferable to the fiery passion. Let's see if I'm getting this right. No, I'm getting it mixed up. Sorry. Socrates had a fiery passion to know, but that fiery passion gave him a steadiness of determination. So we know in Socratic dialogues, he's persisting to get to the truth. He's not giving up like those that he speaks with. Some will say, you know, well, this is the truth, that's obvious. And Socrates will say, is that really the case? Let's keep going till we are sure we have it. We have the truth. So this is called steadiness of soul. There are challenges, we all experience them, to our steadiness in the practice of devotional service. Have you ever experienced some challenge to your steadiness? No. So this kind of gets down to the point, what do we do when despite all of our steadiness or resolve, despite everything, the challenges are there. That's when we have to become humble. That's where humility wins the day. Humility is, first of all, recognizing I am very, 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 very small. Trinadabhi samichena tarori vasayishana. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sada hari. The steadiness to be able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra steadily arises out of this humility, which is feeling small. And when something is small, then big things can't harm it. The big wind blows, but the little ants are just happily crawling along in the grass, and so on. They are not affected. So humility, that's where we need to feel humility. And of course, feeling humility means to feel a new kind of determination, which is, Krishna, help! To turn to Krishna and say, Krishna, I'm helpless, I'm weak, I am, despite all of my determination, I am not sustaining the steadiness that I should. Please help. So these are a few of so many things we could say, but I'd like to hear if any of you have some thoughts on the virtue, the quality of steadiness, how to get it, how to maintain it, how to expand it. Yes?
Like in the verse of the second chapter, you want to eat a mass for the table of hope, But what's his delusion? It's unsteady, and it's his reality is staying.
Oh, okay. Yes, the difference between asat and sat. One, let's see, how is it? Nasato vidite vago. Na avago vidite sata. Yeah, it's an interesting verse, actually. It turns everything around and makes you think four times before you actually get it. So asat is characterized by abhava, which means non-existence, literally. And sat consists of that which exists. And that which exists is that which is constant. So if something is constant, if something exists, then it must always exist. And if something doesn't exist, it never exists. Interesting. Okay. Yes, also in the second chapter, Krishna says, Yam hi na vyatayante te kuyam prasharshava samadukha sukham dhiram sovritapaya kalkate. He says this immediately after explaining the very first practical instruction he gives to Arjuna, Matra Sparsha Sudandeya Sitojna Sukha Dukada Agana Abhaino Nityas Tamsite Chasva Vardana. One should be tolerant of the coming and going of happiness and distress and so on. And then this next verse he says, Yam hi na vyatayanti ete purusham. The purusha, the person who is not vyatayanti, who is not disturbed, who is not thrown off by dukkha and sukha. One who is sama, one who is equal in dukkha and sukha. That dhira, amritatma, he literally gains nectar, and it comes to mean immortality. So the first qualification for immortality is steadiness in the midst of happiness and distress. And it's exactly that which is always so difficult, because when you feel really happy, you want to rejoice and feel happy and turn somersaults and have a good time. Party, right? I'm happy, time for a party. Forget about devotional service. It's party time. And then when there's misery, forget about devotional service. I'm miserable. And the rest of the world should be miserable too, because I'm miserable. And that's exactly the time when the steadiness must be there. I remember when I was young. I was young once. And I was quite young. And I don't remember exact circumstances, but my father told me that he was told by his boss. I guess my father had not gone to work that day. I don't remember what it was, but then his boss reprimanded him. He asked him, "Why weren't you at work?" "Well, I had a headache." And his boss, the senior officer, said, "Half the world's work is done with a headache." So just tolerate it. Hare Krishna. Okay. Anything else? Right then. So have a nice day. Yeah? Have a nice steady day. Prantarab Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nanda Bhakti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.
Yadoni Vyas Krishna Ketamala Ki Jai.